Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
Hey folks, there's still a lot of NBA playoff basketball to be played. And with Autograph, you can still take advantage of your basketball/Lakers fandom. On the Autograph app, all of your favorite sports content, sports articles, videos, podcasts, including yours truly, can be found in one place. And the more you read, listen, like, comment, and engage with this content, like you normally do, the more fans coins you'll earn, which you can then parlay into some pretty sweet sports prizes, like $24 playoff tickets or $2 signed jerseys. Also, throughout the NBA playoffs, Autograph will continue to drop awesome rewards for fans, including 25% off Lakers merchandise. So all you need to do is download the Autograph app, check the description box of this episode, click the link, use the code LITLEGACY. All you need to do is sign up, create an account, and start fandoming away. Make sure to check the rewards tab to see all of the cool rewards Autograph will continue to drop throughout the NBA playoffs this year. And yeah, get rewarded for your fandom today on Autograph. All right, welcome everybody to the Lakers Legacy Podcast, where, as Anthony Davis so famously likes to say, that's Jamal, folks. That's Jamal Murray, folks, and that is all, folks. The Lakers 2023-24 season is officially over, and it ended in much the same way that last year's season ended, to the fucking Denver Nuggets. But what an exciting final game. What a surprisingly tight-knit, hard-fought five-game series that is unfortunately littered with a ton of what-ifs on the Lakers' end. But yeah, the Lakers lose to the Nuggets 1-4, and they lost to another Jamal Murray game winner. A gentleman's sweep, but one that may not be remembered correctly for how close and again how hard-fought it was, purely based off of the final results. But yes, the Lakers season is now over, and the long offseason begins. I'm your host, Jonathan Hernandez, and I'm joined by my co-host, Tommy Alexander. Tommy, before we get into the game, before we get into our retrospective of this series, how are you feeling after last night's game? Are you disappointed? Are you heartbroken again, like in Game 2? Did you actually think we had a shot at making history, or were you kind of already prepped for this moment after Game 3?
I think I was prepped for the moment, not even after Game 3. I mean, Denver, like, we came into this series knowing Denver was the better team. They're the defending champs. I didn't have an expectation we were going to win. I think, like, of course, every time you lose, especially when you don't get blown out, it's like the nature of it is to be a little disappointed. But I don't know. I almost look at it the other way. It's like we were a 7 seed playing a 2 seed in any other circumstance. A 7 seed pushing a 2 seed this far would be viewed as an accomplishment. And Denver was celebrating that win like they won the Western Conference Finals. So they clearly viewed it as a big accomplishment for themselves as well.
Now, the way that the game played out, if you're just looking at the game in a vacuum, how did you feel after seeing Jamal Murray beat us again with that? It wasn't a buzzer beater, but a game-winning jumper.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's like, it's annoying, but it's like annoying also in the sense that you feel like anyone with eyes could see this coming like a mile away. I mean, he had been on one like the entire game. He had been like hitting jumpers over AD. You knew when they were coming down in the half court without using a timeout and the game scored and they know the clock and they have the advantage, like, you know, they're going to run. And so it's like, you know, it's like the fact that have played this team so many times and are so focused on this team and we still can't defend that, or have no answer for that Jokic and Murray pick and roll, or no idea for how to muck it up in any way. It's disappointing, but again, it's, you tip your hat. It's ridiculous. I don't think it should have taken Denver two game winners to win this series, but you know, it's amazing that he was able to do that in one series for sure.
Yeah. We were essentially two Jamal Murray game winners, one buzzer beater away from actually being up 3-2. I think for me, if you're looking at last night's game in a vacuum, the reason why, I mean, it still sucked. Don't get me wrong. That was a gut punch. Yeah, it sucked seeing Jamal Murray hit another mid-range jump shot in our eyes and then not having a timeout afterwards to even get up a good shot. Do you find it ironic that our season ended on a Torian Prince Hail Mary?
Yeah, I mean, it's like, it's nobody's fault again. It's like, we didn't have enough time to get a shot, but yeah, it's hilarious that that's how it ended.
That's like a perfect encapsulation of this season. Torian Prince with no shot in hell. Darvin Ham counting on him to try and win the game from half court. But I think for me, the reason why, even though it still sucked seeing that, the reason why I was, I guess, resigned to that outcome was because Anthony Davis got hurt at the start of the third quarter, you know? And yeah, at that point, I was like, all right, I think this is over. It was amazing that the Lakers were able to continually keep punching back to get it to the point where it was a one possession game and we still could have won the game, because Anthony Davis only had one shot attempt the entire second half. At that point, I mean, he was literally a decoy. And so I think when that Jamal Murray shot went in, I was kind of like, yeah, they that was them putting us out of our misery. You know, if Anthony Davis had been healthy, I mean, he was stellar in the first half. If he was healthy, then yeah, that would have been a much deeper shot to the heart. But again, it was kind of a soft landing because of all these different things that prepped us for that moment, even though, again, what a terrible way to go out. But overall for me, if we're backtracking a little bit, I feel like I had come to terms with this series and made my peace with the season after game three. Game two was obviously such a terrible gut punch, seeing Jamal Murray hit the actual buzzer beater and then Anthony Davis crumpled towards the Denver Nuggets bench. But I think you did too. I got myself up for game three. You did, right? Knowing we'd be at home, we'd be in front of our home crowd, even with how devastating game two's loss was, prior to the game three itself, I was like, all right, we're finally going to do this. We've got some confidence. We know that we can actually get leads on this team. We just need to sustain it, and now we're going to be in front of our home crowd. Were you at least feeling that sort of optimism prior to game three?
Yeah, I had the most optimism that I had the entire series before game three.
Yeah, and unfortunately, game three ended up playing out the way that it did, and everyone outside of LeBron James and Anthony Davis just shit the bed. And it's sad because that was the most perplexing outlier game of this series from the Lakers' standpoint. And that's actually the game that I'll look back on and be like, what if we had just showed up to that game like we did every other game in this series, you know? But after we lost that game in the fashion that we did, after the terrible optics of D'Angelo Russell eating chocolate on the bench or something, I was like, oh, this series is over. This team is checked out. We're done. But then game four happened, and you know, even though it was a little too late, the team came out with renewed focus, energy, and spirit, and they played their most flawless basketball on both ends of the court against the Denver Nuggets on Saturday. And even though I knew this series was still over, I was like, well, you know, maybe we can drum up some additional momentum for next year and feel good about ourselves now that we've got this Denver monkey off of our backs. And once we finally had belief in knowing that we could beat them, that it was actually possible, maybe we could not only, maybe we could ride that momentum to at least a game six back at Crypto. I mean, a game five at Denver, and then bring it back to Crypto in game six, and then even potentially push it to a game seven in Denver where they'd inevitably sputter out. But still, like, I was feeling pretty good about game four. But all that to say, I think game three was really the final death knell, for obvious reasons, outside of the fact that, you know, no team has ever come back down from 0-3 in a seven game series. And yeah, I'm not mad or disappointed about last night's game. I actually commend the Lakers players for really fighting and grinding through that game, even in spite of some bad shooting performances, and even in spite of AD getting hurt at the start of the third. They kept clawing and fighting and going jab for jab with the Nuggets all the way till the end, and that's really all you can ask for. And I don't know, if anything, I come away from that game and this series thinking that we have the right structure here. It's unfortunate that guys like Jared Vanderbilt and Christian Wood were not healthy or available, but this team was never meant to go toe-to-toe with Denver without a guy like Jared Vanderbilt, you know? And I just hope that, and we'll get into, you know, future offseason plans and whatnot later, but I just hope that the front office does not overreact too much to the roster and blow things up, and I hope we instead react appropriately to the head coach and adjust the margins from there, which it seems like they're going to do according to reports. But yeah, it was an expected outcome after going down 0-3, and especially after AD got hurt. I almost just resigned myself fully to that fate multiple steps of the way. But credit to the guys, they kept fighting, and I'm just glad they didn't go out like punks. Tommy, if I had to ask you what your biggest what if of the series was, looking at this five game stretch, what would you point to? It could be a play, it could be an actual game, it could be a player. What would you point to as that pivot what if point that makes you say, if this had just happened, maybe it would have shifted the entire outcome of the series?
So I think the one that I will point to, because I feel like this was a kind of critical series shifting potential moment, and this might be silly, right, in hindsight, but game two, it's really a non-call, right? But the not using the challenge on that LeBron foul on Jamal Murray with 50 seconds left, and then he ends up tying the game. And clearly that foul would have been overturned given the way that they did reviews. By the way, in that game, right? Like, that was the original marginal contact game, but the entire series had been clearly trending a certain way with physicality and reviews. And to close a game where you blow a 20-point lead on the road to the defending champs and lose on a game winner, and to close that game with two timeouts and a challenge in your back pocket, that to me is like, I mean, it's inexcusable, but it's also, you know, you have to wonder what if, because it's, you hold on to that lead, right? Whatever, you could blow the 18 of the 20 points, but if you hold on to that lead, and you go out of, you know, Denver tied 1-1 into like what was almost assuredly going to be like a very, you know, kind of lit up Staples crowd, that makes a difference. Once you take a 2-1 lead, you take advantage. Even if you split the home series, right, have the exact same outcome that we had, you know, how it actually did end up turning out in L.A., then it's like you extend the series and now KCP is starting to get a little banged up. Now Jamal Murray is starting to get a little banged up. And then slowly you start to realize, okay, the Denver Nuggets have five guys who play 42 minutes a game. And if these two guards start to get banged up, that's problematic. And so it's like, you know, things start to look different. But, you know, I guess my macro point here is coaching is like the thing I'd regret. But if I have to choose a specific moment, I'd go to that moment. It's indicative to me of a lot of things this season. It's like a stupid little moment, but these stupid little moments add up over the course of the season and cause what should have been like a 50-plus win team to be like the seventh seed in the West.
Yeah, so I'm not going to get cute with it. My biggest what if of the series is just game two in its entirety. I mean, outside of the obvious, biggest what if of the series is like wishing Vanderbilt and Wood were available, because those are literally our two best non-AD rebounders. And I know you had mentioned prior to the series that this is probably not a Vando series because of what happened last year and how he was played off the court offensively, but seeing as to how the team was just lacking in energy, athleticism, guys who could just box out, Vanderbilt would have been a huge difference, you know?
And the reason I said it wasn't a Vando series as opposed to, I think what I said was Wood is probably more important to the series than Vando because of rebounding. And I said rebounding is going to be one of the biggest factors in the series, and that ended up being the case, right?
Yeah. But I think even with this playoffs, you see, I mean, Rui, for one thing, played like Vando on the offensive end, maybe even worse, because Vando actually passes pretty well, you know? So it's like, if you're going to get zero Vanderbilt production from Rui in this series anyways, can you imagine what he would have done to just lock down and trail Michael Porter Jr.? This series ended up becoming a muck it up, grind it out kind of series, you know, where it's like whoever got to the 50-50 balls first and could turn the other team over the most and get it out into transition was usually the team that would carry the game through at the end, you know? And so Vanderbilt would have just amplified that to the fullest extent. But anyways, my biggest what if is just the entirety of game two. And to your point, like, what if we had just split those games on the road? And I think, like, also in the fashion, the way that game two ended, I feel like the way we lost that game was so devastatingly traumatic that I feel like it really rattled our role players to the core, to the point where when it came time for game three, even though we were in front of our crowd, it's almost like the life got sucked out of D'Angelo Russell, Rui Hachimura, Austin Reeves, everybody else, you know, and they all turned into ghosts. And so, and I feel like the coaching staff was scrambling too, where they went away from everything that was actually working in games one and game two. In game three, you know, everybody was rattled from how game two ended. And it seemed like we needed game three to just catch our bearings again. And so my biggest what if is wondering if we had just won game two and come back to Staples or Crypto 1-1 and just seen that belief a little bit sooner. I think it would have changed the entire complexion of this series because the Lakers' psyche would have just changed completely. I mean, you saw how they, we'll get into the game right now, but you saw how after game four, when we finally beat them, you know, the buzzer sounded, it said Lakers with a W, Denver with an L, just having that seed of belief, it carried through to this game. You could see in the first quarter, even after the first quarter, when the Nuggets had a 4-point lead, that did not deter the Lakers, LeBron, AD, Austin Reeves, even D'Angelo Russell from the game plan. It's almost like they figured something out and they were confident. I've never seen that type of confidence. And so I'm watching last night's game and I'm like, oh shit. The Denver Nuggets looked like us earlier on in the series. And the Lakers seemed like the more composed and poised team, just running through the motions of their process and not getting rattled by, you know, Denver going on runs or whatever. And all I'm left thinking is, what if this had happened earlier? What if we had gotten that one win earlier? How would this have carried through? Because that game three was such a blip that really derailed everything, you know? So if we had won game two and come into game three with that confidence, who knows where we would be? I mean, it was already close to being, what, at least a 2-3 series, maybe even 3-2 in the Lakers' favor. But, you know, you lose game two to that buzzer beater, and then the Lakers have to mentally collect themselves out of the rubble in game three, and the series is already done from there. And then obviously, you know, Anthony Davis hurts his shoulder last night, and that kind of derails everything from that point as well. But yeah, so that's my biggest what if of the series. Let's talk about the game now, because last night's game was probably, outside of obviously game four, which we literally won, outside of that game, I thought last night's game was a more sustainably winnable game than what happened in game two, when AD and D'Lo were unconscious in the first half of that game. Yeah. And to me, that shows tremendous growth from the team, even though obviously it's too little too late. But I felt like the Lakers were really inspired to start the game. The guys were flying around, causing turnovers, getting out into transition. They did not seem rattled. If anything, It honestly felt like we had Denver on their toes and they were a bit shaken. I keep hearing these takes that like, oh, Denver didn't take the Lakers seriously again. They just haven't played up to par in this series. It's more about Denver than it is the Lakers. But you probably could have said that for the first three games of this series, but not last night's game. The Lakers were literally taking it to Denver, and the Denver Nuggets were like, oh, hell, what do we do? And all of a sudden, bad things started happening where it's like KCP sprains his ankle, and you could tell that they were waning in confidence a little. They look confused. Meanwhile, LeBron, AD, Austin, and D'Lo all look confident and poised. And yeah, I actually felt like, you know, our top players were pretty confident all series, but it wasn't until we actually got the win in game four that it seemed even more palpable. That confidence seemed even more palpable because they finally had a tangible win to fall back on. But yeah, you know, AD's injury to start the third was really our final death knell in this game and the ultimate backbreaker, even though the guys really, really fought in the fourth quarter to make it a one possession game. But the missed free throws, 9 missed free throws, Spencer going 0 of 2, Austin hitting 1 of 3 on a 3-point foul, LeBron missing his and ones. The ham no timeout in the third quarter when Denver went on an 8-0 run, that momentum shifted the game completely. In spite of that, Austin Reeves went on his mini ham run, and then D'Angelo Russell joined him as well. You could tell LeBron James was gassed in the last 5 minutes of the fourth, so he gave it up to Austin and D'Lo, and both of them attacked the rack. You know, they combined for 13 points, 6 of 9 from the field. Obviously, they had to pick up the slack with Anthony Davis being a decoy on offense. And so, yeah, we got it down to a one possession game. We just didn't play perfectly at the end of the day. But yeah, I like the way that the guys fought. Yeah, I feel like all of these guys really grew in this series, even considering how shorthanded this team was. And yeah, I guess what are your biggest takeaways from last night's game?
Yeah, I think we, you know, you keep mentioning the guys fought, and I think that's a really good sign. And I think it's worth, you know, kind of repeating it, because I think one thing that Laker fans tend to do is like project their own emotions onto these like professional basketball players, which feels ridiculous. And, you know, when you really think about it, and it's like, yeah, it's okay. These guys lost a devastating game in game two, but they're professionals and they have to come back and finish the series. And they did, and they fought. And, you know, like you said, there were moments in game four, in game five, where it felt like, oh shit, you know, is LeBron really going to do it? You know, mm-hmm. Is LeBron really good? Because once you win that game, right, it's like, then you go back home. And of course you've got all, it's not going to be easy because it's still Denver. But it's like, you've got the momentum on your side, and then you find yourself in game seven with LeBron James on your team. So it was a good effort. I think, like, you know, I said this before the game, but any playoff win is a huge win at any point, but even when you're down, like you know, if the Lakers team emotion was just based on NBA Twitter, they would have rolled over on after game two and just given up. But you know, they fought, and what did we get after the game three win, right? We got another game for D'Lo to prove himself, and he had a nice game. We got another game for Austin to, like, recover from the first two really bad games that he played in this series, and he did. He had a nice game. We got a chance for Rui to come out and have his first, like, halfway decent game of the whole series, because he was pretty useless on both ends most of the time, right? So it was good in that sense. And yeah, I mean, you say, you know, sustainable. I think we played this team very well all five games. I think, like you said, there was outliery stuff going on in game two on our end. Maybe some outliery stuff going on in game three on the Nuggets end with Aaron Gordon putting up like a Wilt Chamberlain stat line against LeBron James. So it's like, you in a best of seven, you get those types of games. But every other game, I thought, was pretty even. And I think it's like what you said before the season. I think, notwithstanding what a lot of people are going to say and what you read online, I don't think the talent gap between these two teams is that big. I think Denver is more talented, certainly in their starting five, but I just think, you know, ultimately, as we predicted, it came down to coaching. And I think it came down to coaching yesterday too, frankly, because, you know, it's like people focus on the little moments. When AD got his shoulder injury, I just don't get it, right? And I don't get, like, the lack of communication between our medical staff and our coaches, or what happened there. AD, when he came back in the fourth, was still injured, but he was completely different than what he looked like in the third. And I suspect what happened was he got bumped, right? He didn't get like his shoulder dislocated. He got a small bump. Something about that bump either caused a spasm or some sort of nerve pinch or something, right? He was just physically in pain and couldn't move his arm. And this coaching staff let him run around out there for 8.5 minutes with a dangle arm. Yeah. And it's just like, you kind of wonder, had you just taken this fool out and stretched it and massaged it out and put him back in the game in the third quarter, you know, towards the end, like maybe you don't have these like wild swings, you know, that you're having with Denver, where like we're playing 3-on-5 because Rui can't score and AD is playing with one arm. Coaching kept coming back to bite us, and it came back to bite us in that game too. I take a big issue with how they handled that injury, by the way. I know he gets injured, but the way that they handled that with letting this guy run around for 8.5 minutes in a playoff game with a dangly arm is like completely silly to me.
Yeah, not the least of which, aren't you still trying to win the game? And to your point, this is when Denver is going on its run. I don't know what the thought process is.
What was the point of activating Christian Wood and activating Jared Vanderbilt and playing Jackson Hayes, who played okay, but not putting any of those guys in during that time?
Yeah, I don't know. And what was the point of Austin Reeves only playing 34 minutes last night and the whole series, Spencer and Gabe splitting minutes? And it goes back to that sort of, you know, this was our concern, right? Gabe has done some nice things, but at a certain point, you have to pick one of your guards. And at the end of the season, it was Spencer who had started to work himself into a rhythm, right? He was shooting like 38, 39% from three by the end. He had shown himself as a really sturdy defender. And then Gabe comes in and splits his minutes in half. How are any of them going to find a rhythm? And they never did, you know? So it's like we half-assed two things instead of whole-assed one thing. That's like the Darvin Ham story this entire season. And then
Darvin Ham career story.
Oh yeah, Darvin Ham's career story. And it's interesting hearing people, I don't know. D'Lo is just an easy target. He had a rough shooting night last night. He was 2 of 10 from three. But I felt like, well, for one thing, I rewatched all of his shots. Three or four of those were in and outs. That's just going to happen in a road playoff game. He should have hit those shots, but those didn't go in. What did he do instead? He was focused and locked in and engaged on defense, right? Last night's game was not D'Angelo Russell's fault. In fact, in the fourth quarter, he was actually taking it into the paint and he hit two clutch buckets, you know? That's all you can ask for D'Angelo Russell, if he's not hitting his shots, to stay engaged with the game, and that's what he did. It's not D'Angelo Russell's fault. You can maybe blame it on Rui Hachimura and his lack of defensive awareness, but at the end of the day, I think you're right. This falls on the coaching and the preparedness of these players. There are some coaches who allow their teams to figure things out without a timeout. What out of this team and this season has showed you that this is the type of team to do that with? Nothing. Yeah. You know, he should have called timeout.
Yeah. And by the way, like the guy who was famous for that, right, was Phil Jackson. But it was always like there was a purpose to it. It was during the regular season, particularly early season. And the reason his thing was figure it out was because he wouldn't call a timeout when guys weren't executing the game plan. It wasn't figure it out. I'm not calling a timeout while his guys are hunched over with their hands on their knees and they can't breathe and they need a break. Right. So that's like the thing about Darvin is like, and like, honestly, a lot of coaches, I'll focus on Darvin because he's our coach, but like, you know, it's like form over substance. It's like, oh, somebody did this and I heard somebody at some point say, let them figure it out. So now that's what I'm going to do. I'm just going to do that's what good coaches do. But it's like God gave us all a brain for a reason, right? And you have to like use that and contextualize. And there's no contextualizing with this team and this coaching staff. And so it's like, that's how you end game three with two timeouts in your pocket because, you know, save timeouts till the end. But it's like, you have to use them. And, you know, I don't know. Again, it's like a lack of understanding of who this team is and who your players are. To me, it felt like every time we ran it, we called a timeout in the fourth quarter and ran a play, we got a good basket. We got a good bucket. We got a good look. I'm sure Chris Gent was drawing up these plays. Like, you know, but it worked, right? And multiple times down the stretch and crucial, you know, at crucial moments, we had timeouts. and we didn't use them. And Denver, didn't use them either, but they didn't need to because they're a veteran team who plays the same five guys every night. And that's why they look organized and we look disorganized.
Yeah, and it feels, and it's just, they know what their bread and butter is, and they have different counters to their bread and butter, and they know with the utmost confidence what to fall back on. And it feels like the Lakers just pick and choose game by game, situation by situation, you know? And to me, that's on the players, but that also goes back to coaching and also what Rui said about not having enough continuity and time with one another. So it's a lot of different things, but yeah, at the end of the day, the coaching disparity was very apparent and too much to overcome when you're already dealing with a shorthanded roster who's missing its most valuable rebounders and also defenders in the case of Vanderbilt. So the Lakers needed to be perfect. They need to be perfect on the margins. The players weren't, but also at the end of the day, Darvin Ham wasn't. People like to like pinpoint like Rui Hachimura's shooting, D'Angelo Russell's shooting, Austin Reeves shooting. But if you look at the entirety of the playoffs, Tommy, non-superstars, non-all-stars always shoot inconsistently in the playoffs. This is nothing out of the ordinary. And still the Lakers were in every game. So what does it come down to next? It comes down to coaching. It's not like, it is a make or miss league, but guess what? D'Angelo Russell, Austin Reeves, Rui Hachimura, Spencer Dinwiddie, Gabe Vincent are not all-stars. Even the all-stars who are making $30 million have 30% shooting nights and can't do shit, you know? So where are you going to find your advantage? Like, this is par for the course in the playoffs. Jamal Murray freaking was shooting 22% from three, okay?
Jamal,
It comes,
that's some yeah. It people do get too focused on the role player performance. It's like this every year in the playoffs, okay? And we said it before the playoffs. We said, our guys, top four players in this series, we just need to make sure LeBron and AD are two and three. They were, right? And after that, the important thing becomes like at least being even with the role players, and we weren't. And so that's just how it shook out in this series. But notwithstanding the fact that like Rui had a horrific, horrific series after a really, really good season. Austin had a pretty weak series for I would say like the majority of the time. And then D'Lo was, kind of 50-50. Notwithstanding like our three best role players having kind of mid-series, we were in every single game. And that's where it becomes unacceptable. Like if your players are putting you in a position to be there, like at the end, you can't be losing games because of coaching decisions. And you went over a bunch of them already, but that's what it came down to for us this season. Denver is playing their best players. We're for some reason trying to figure out how to finagle Gabe into this like group that's played together all year, and not playing Max Christie while Denver is playing like Peyton Watson and Christian Brown. And again, they played those guys during the season, but we played Max Christie during the season in the event that we needed him for something like this, right? And the time comes around and we don't. We're finishing games with challenges and timeouts in our pocket, and it's just like there were multiple games lost this series because of coaching. That's insane in one series, right? And so that's a big thing that is obviously going to have to change if this team has any chance moving forward.
And judging by the reports coming out right now, it is set to change. We're not sure in what direction, but why don't we take it to break? When we return, let's keep the conversation going and talk about our main takeaways from this playoffs and this series, and maybe get in a little into where the Lakers go from here. So we will catch you guys after the turn.
Baseball fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win a prize every day during the baseball season. Step into the batter's box for BetMGM Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. Pick any area of the strike zone and take your best swing. If you get a single, double, triple, or home run, you'll receive a prize. Smash a home run to collect a bonus bet on us. Just log into your BetMGM sports account to get started. Then visit your promotion section to access the Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. You'll score a prize if you hit a single, double, triple, or home run. There's nothing more exciting than going yard. So swing for the fences with the king of sportsbooks. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary depending on the market and expire 24 hours from issuance. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
All right, so we are back. We're just going to keep talking about the series and maybe focus on what stood out to us and what your main takeaway is, Tommy, with regards to how to position the team moving forward. I mean, at the end of the day, you tip the cap to Denver. They are very well coached. And we didn't even get into, you know, the off-court sound bites from both of these coaches. And everything Darvin Ham says is just so embarrassing. You know, he falls back on all of these different platitudes and idioms and then picks and chooses which ones to use to fit whatever narrative he's trying to gaslight the fans with, even though they're all contradictory to one another, you know. And it's just you go over and hear Mike Malone, and he's just everything he says is so straightforward and practical, and he just seems like a more down-to-earth coach that his players actually respect, you know. And Darvin Ham instead almost acts like he tries to act buddy-buddy, like he's these guys' homies, but everything he says, because it's veiled in this weird, like, Christian quotable mug or whatever, it feels like he's on this throne apart from the players. And it just, you can tell that his own players don't jive with him, you know. It was so embarrassing hearing him after game four say, you know, before the game, I told D'Lo to just go crazy. And you know what D'Lo said to me? He has a nickname for me. He said, I got you, big dog. D'Lo called me big dog. And I'm like, oh my God, what the fuck is going on right now? This is so embarrassing. Okay, anyways. I just want to, you know, tip the cap to Denver and their coach and the fact that it felt like Nikola Jokic sleepwalked into triple doubles this series. He was so
2020
quiet.
Triple doubles.
Jesus Christ. I mean, that guy is amazing. And then Jamal Murray, I have never seen a player like this, Tommy, where in the regular season, he is just a ho-hum 20-point guy. And then in the playoffs, in the last 5 minutes of the playoffs, he turns into the most clutch player you've ever seen. Forget about Dame time. It's Jamal or nothing in the clutch, it seems. So tip of the cap to Murray, Jokic, the Nuggets, and especially Michael Porter Jr. God, that guy was like the best, the second best player on the team, the most consistent player on that team.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and given all of the off-court stuff he was dealing with, I saw this on Twitter. I forgot who tweeted it. He was like, why didn't Jontay Porter just bet all the overs on his brother? I guess, what are some of your takeaways from this series as it pertains to the Lakers? I think I'll start and say, like, the one thing that I'm holding on to is, and maybe this seems very obvious, and I'm looking at this series in a vacuum, but also looking at all the other series in the playoffs, and I think it's just become abundantly clear that when it comes to the non-superstar all-star guys / role players who thrive in the playoffs, they are typically the hard-nosed, try-hard hustle guys who can do more than just score. You know, scoring, shooting, efficiency, they all drop off for everyone, even for the stars, you know? Unless you're Michael Porter Jr., apparently. But for the most part, scoring, shooting, efficiency drops. And when that drops, What can you do to help your team? Are you going to dive on the floor for that loose ball? Are you going to box out? Are you going to be essentially Josh Hart, Alex Caruso light? No one's expecting you to be those types of defenders, but can you get into that mindset when your shot is not falling? Because it will not fall. That's what happens to role players in the playoffs. And so that was my biggest takeaway. I think even D'Angelo Russell came to that fact in the last game, which is kind of encouraging to see. But at the end of the day, even I can, you know, two things are true. D'Angelo Russell grew in the playoffs, even within this series, but it also wasn't enough for the Lakers. So what are we going to do about it moving forward? And the other thing too is like my other big takeaway from this series is Rui Hachimura is not ready. I'm not going to pin this series and blanket statement the rest of his career based off of this one series alone, but I know it was a terrible matchup for him with regards to what Denver does on the offensive end, but the defensive IQ is just not there. He was out of his depth for much of this series, and he had too many like malfunctioning brain farts where he just totally lost Michael Porter Jr. He goes under the screen and all of a sudden he's tailing Michael Porter Jr., who's a movement shooter, who's a 6'10 movement shooter. That just cannot happen. And it's just so strange that someone this strong and this physical is not a good rebounder. I thought we had finally turned that corner when he had that like back-to-back game where those back-to-back games where he had two double-doubles in a row, the first time in his career. But for whatever reason, he just can't seem to put it all together defensively. Like, box out, grab a rebound. You can do it. I know you can. Look at those broad shoulders. I don't get it. And I don't know why he necessarily succeeded last season against this same team. I think it was more because his shot was falling and maybe Rui's game is too predicated on how he does offensively and he can't sort of self-motivate himself from the defensive end and reverse engineer that process. But I don't know, maybe there was something mentally going on with Rui as well. His mental fortitude was just shot. And I think once he started missing those bunnies in game one and game two, he could never get himself like engaged in the game. So I'm not necessarily using this series as an end-all be-all, but if Rui does not improve in this area with regards to defensive awareness and putting defense first and then allowing that to dictate his offense, then yeah, he's probably better off just being a bench forward who can score sometimes for you. So what are some of your takeaways?
Yeah, I think ambulance is driving by me. I think the biggest takeaway for me from this series is still, I don't think we're that far off. You know, we're talking a lot about role players and stuff. I just want to say this about Michael Porter Jr. That guy makes $35 million and would have been a top five pick in the draft if he wasn't hurt coming out of college. So he is just going to be on a, like, we're not getting that. Like, I don't even know if you can call him. I guess he is a role player. I view him more as like a very, 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 very elite high-level scorer. Starter. That's not necessarily the standard. And, like, notwithstanding, you know, the fact that we're probably not going to or may not be able to get a guy like that, I think my biggest takeaway overall is we are pretty close to Denver, right? And that means we're pretty close to the elite in the league. And we play Denver down two rotation players, which, sure, like, people will roll their eyes, but when your game is depth and you don't have the depth, then you don't have your game, right? It's like saying like, okay, well, we lost this series because one of our big three was missing. It's like, and everyone says like, oh, well, for some reason we view that as like such a big loss, but it's like three guys are missing down the roster and everyone says that doesn't matter. Right. But it does. And so I think, you know, Austin, I was worried about, and the first couple of games, it looked like he wasn't ready, right?
But he has a defensive excuse, though, because he held Jamal Murray to, I mean, he was the primary reason Murray was shooting like 38%. But,
well, and by the way, he came back by the end, right? But I was worried about him in the beginning. I was worried about D'Lo. I think, you know, I only raised this to say where I landed on all of this is like pretty different. I think, you know, D'Lo, people are going to, for some reason, think this is crazy. it is going to be a pretty big loss if D'Lo walks, for a variety of reasons. But the biggest one, by the way, being he is just actually still one of our best players. I mean, like, people, again, will clown D'Lo for his series and his very, very up and down games this series, but
that happens to everybody, though.
It happens to everybody, and averaging out his up and downs, he was still the third best player on our team overall, right? And
making $17 million is the most important.
Making $17 million, and so, you know, you got to keep that, if anything, to just keep the contract, you know, because I don't care what people on Lakers Twitter, you know, are saying. Like, Terry Rozier got traded for a first round draft pick. D'Angelo Russell is better and makes less money. So, you know, you got those are the kinds of contracts you have to, like, actually try to keep. I think where I, you know, sort of stand with the rest of the team is I don't know, you know, a huge part of Gabe looking completely useless, other than, like, obviously he's brilliant defensively, but it doesn't really matter against Jamal Murray most of the time in the series. Like, Gabe, I just, it's too hard to say whether he's going to be a helpful contributing player moving forward. I think, you know, Rui, I agree with you, it was not good, and I would probably not be planning my long-term future in LA if I was him. But, you know, it's just like with the rest of the roster, I think we can get there, and I don't think we're that many pieces away. And I don't think the answer is, like, you know, getting rid of, you know, people will say D'Lo, but even Austin, you know, Austin is maybe our best trade asset, but we're paying our, you know, if D'Lo opts in, we'll be paying our starting backcourt like $30 million next year. And you're just not, like, getting, again, that kind of output for most $30 million players. And we're filling two spots. I don't know. Anyway, all this is a long way of saying I just don't think we're that far off.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I mean, AD said as much in his post-game interview, which we haven't gotten to, but, like, it was so bizarre that they were doing their exit interviews after the game. It's just the tale of the season. What a bizarre-ass season. But I feel like this team, I mean, people don't want to hear this, but this team, as downtrodden as they were, if you contextualize the fact that they were actively in revolt of their own coach as they're winning these games to try and salvage their season, without their best non-AD defensive player in Jared Vanderbilt, it's kind of all the more impressive that we even got to this point, that we even looked competent against the defending world champs, and that there was a spark in LeBron James' eye in last night's game that said, oh, these motherfuckers better not let us win this because we figured something out. You know, like, how did we even get to that point with how messy this season was and with how shorthanded we were? Again, this team was never meant to be deployed without Jared Vanderbilt. Jared Vanderbilt is the connector piece that glues the skill guards together. We thought that maybe we had a shot with Rui Hachimura because of the 23-10 run we made to close the season, where our offensive efficiency was sky high. But we were reminded again in the playoffs that all of that is going to fall off. And how are you going to be when it gets nitty gritty? And our offense tailed off, right? And Rui wasn't able to live up to the challenge. And so our skill guards had very inconsistent series as a result of that. But I agree with you. I think, you know, we're hearing all this Trae Young stuff, chasing for a third star. And I don't know. I guess we'll get to that point when we get to that point and wrap our heads around that if that ends up being the case. But I just feel like to chase a third star, Trae Young is clearly better than D'Angelo Russell, but you can't, it's of my opinion now that you cannot commit $40 million to a short guard, no matter how good they are, unless they are literally Kyrie Irving. And the list is short from there. I think it's Kyrie Irving and I think that's
Kyrie Irving and Steph Curry.
And Steph Curry, sure.
If you're not Kyrie Irving and Steph Curry, I'm not paying you if you're 6'1". That's the thing, right? Yeah. And there's so many people who are happy to do it for some reason, and those guys never win unless they're Kyrie Irving or Steph Curry.
It's because they're just focused on LeBron James and Anthony Davis's timeline. You need the third star. We're tired of the inconsistent play from D'Lo and Austin Reeves or whatever. And it's like, I don't know. You've never seen Trae Young in a tertiary third role position before. Yeah. And in a number one position Go look up his playoff percentages, my friend. He's averaging 29 points and 10 assists, but look at the percentages. He is a modern-day Allen Iverson. He's shooting like 38% from the field and 25% from three. I'm not even joking. It's like ridiculous. No, how is he going to fare next to Anthony Davis and LeBron James if he's not getting the ball to get into a rhythm and you're paying him $40 million and you don't have any flexibility around your roster again?
Yeah. I mean, look, if you want to be really, really, really harsh, Trae Young is what a lot of people would refer to as like an inefficient chucker. So the numbers look amazing when he's on this like completely useless team, right? And they had that one flash in the pan season where they caught some lucky breaks with matchups and made the Eastern Conference Finals, like when he was pretty young. But he's a career chucker who averages 5 turnovers a game. So, you know, and that's how he played in, Oklahoma, right? He's just always kind of been this way. It's not just, though, you know, notwithstanding everything I just said, it's still not the case that, you know, I disagree that Trae Young would be an upgrade over D'Angelo Russell, but that's not the question. Like, it would take so many pieces to get Trae Young. And then what are you left to like fill out the roster with? Like, you're taking a step forward, but you're taking so many other steps back. And the point of like, you know, what we've been trying to convey, and I think the point of what this series kind of showed us is like, we really are not that far off. So if we're taking one step forward, two steps back, we're not moving in the right direction. You know, we should be upgrading our pieces that did not look great in this playoffs, but not at the expense of turning multiple starters into one guy. Like, you know, maybe I can get behind turning multiple bench guys into one starter, or like multiple bench guys into a more solidified rotation player, but turning multiple starters into one guy who's going to be at best your third best player and you're going to pay him $45 million. I mean, it's not as bad as the Bradley Beal situation, but it's not great.
Yeah. And I'll give credit to Trae Young during that series where they went on that run to the Eastern Conference Finals. He hit a bunch of clutch shots. But again, that was as the number one guy. When you have all that usage, when you have the ball in your hands, you're always going to be in rhythm. D'Angelo Russell was also a clutch player on the Minnesota Timberwolves or the Brooklyn Nets too. You know, it's like, you do not know how they're going to respond. Right now, the aura surrounding Trae Young is like, he's the ice Trae. He hits clutch shots. But how many does he miss? How many games are they not even in position to take clutch shots in the first place? So it's just.
Every few years, there's a guy like this who comes around where you just like look at him and you're like, okay, this guy is not actually a winning basketball player, but he deserves to be an all-star. He's really, really good. And I think what people don't realize, like in these cases, is you're perceiving all of these things because he is a guy that you can put on the Charlotte Hornets and like they can win some games because he's like, I'll put the team on my back guy. That's not the same. That, first of all, that's not necessarily what we need. And second of all, that's not like necessarily winning basketball.
Yeah. So there are actually 4 guys, Kyrie Irving, Steph Curry, and now I'll add Jalen Brunson and De'Aaron Fox to that list. Unless you can get those guys, I'm not paying anybody else who's under 6'2", $40 million, okay? With that said, I think that's enough for this episode. We shall get more into just off-season talk in the future. We have a lot of time, unfortunately, now. But yeah, you know, at least we get to watch basketball stress-free and not haggle over this role player and that role player on Twitter, although I'm sure that's going to happen through the course of the offseason. But yeah, with that said, thank you guys for listening. We will catch you guys next time. Follow us on Twitter at Lakers Legacy Pod. Please also rate and review us 5 stars on the Apple Podcast app and give us a 5-star thumb tap on Spotify as well. Tommy, I will catch you later.
Peace.
See ya.
Prime Day es el 16 y 17 de julio. Con las ofertas épicas exclusivas para miembros Prime, recibe el reconocimiento que tanto mereces.
¡Wow! Gracias. Ni siquiera preparé un discurso.
Quisiera agradecer a mi familia, que siempre necesita cosas. También a Sam, mi repartidor, por entregarme todas mis ofertas increíbles tan rápido. ¡Te adoro, Sam!
¡Mua! Compra ofertas en electrónicos, hogar y más este Prime Day, del 16 al 17 de julio.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.